ESPN's Teron Davenport, talking Titans now on Robbie and Rex Road on ESPN 102.5 The Game and the Game Nashville app.
It's that time of week here on Robbie and Rex Road, sponsored by First Horizon. Big, big muscle, small, big hustle. Visit firsthorizon.com/get it all. And we are happy, as we are every Friday at 8, to welcome in our friend Teron Davenport, TD, ESPN NFL Nation. Just finished up a busy week of Titans minicamp. So first of all, TD, just prevailing takeaway, whatever it may be, big picture with the team, chemistry, culture, one player. You walk away from this week of spending with the Titans, and your number one thing on top of mind is what?
That's a good question. I would say number one thing on the top of the mind is it's got to be Cam Ward and the potential that he has. I think that's the prevailing thought. I mean, he showed flashes, but he definitely made it clear that there's a lot more progress that he needs to make. So it was a good experience and exposure, getting to see that, and that's what it would be.
So I'm going to stick with that. I don't know if you've been blessed to hear Stilley's confidence take on Cam Ward, but I think what fans want to know is, like, okay, a year ago there was excitement about Will Levis. Will Levis had ups and downs. He had some good days in practice. He threw some picks, whatever. This happens for everybody, but there was a lot of confidence. There was a lot of confidence expressed in him from Brian Callahan, and, you know, this is why I took the job. So, and I know that Levis wasn't a rookie a year ago, TD, but if you could compare maybe where Cam, in any way, where Cam is now compared to where you thought Levis was a year ago.
I'll tell you one thing that shows a difference. Calvin Ridley. How consistently do you see Calvin Ridley catching deep passes? How rare is it any of us are saying, hey, they got to figure out a way to get the timing down on that? That's, I think it starts right there, honestly. It just, Cam Ward is a better quarterback. I don't think there's any getting around it. It's the truth. It's nothing towards Will Levis. It just is what it is.
And that is, you know, you think about last year, that was well into training camp that we were talking about the Levis Ridley thing. And now, although Ridley did apparently tear him up on the ping pong table, but no, that's a really interesting point.
That's what I was actually going to get into with TD here. The ping pong video yesterday, I think, was kind of a good sign of how Cam Ward has been able to, you know, relate to some of his teammates and created a bond with a lot of different guys around the team. How have you seen the teammates that he's been able to interact with over the last couple of weeks really start to adjust to Cam Ward and view him as a leader in that locker room?
Oh, I think it's pretty clear that they love his presence. And I mean, a good example yesterday, right? When Cody Barton picked him off, you got Arden Key, Jeffrey Simmons, and some of the other defenders. They're doing the celebration back to him. Right. And then the day before, he found somebody for a touch. I think it was the Ridley one, actually. He found Ridley for a touchdown, and Tony Pollard did the celebration to the defense. So anytime you're imitating somebody, like, that's, you know, imitation is the greatest form of flattery. So you got that. But I think more importantly, just the way they talk about him, I think the way that you see the back and forth going, the willingness for the receivers, you know, even veterans like Van Jefferson, even Ridley himself, they discuss things, and then they, you know, they give a hand clap, but then they go right back to it. And a lot of times the things that they discuss or the adjustment that they make, because you see them kind of acting it out, you'll see it happen later in practice successfully. So I think all of those things kind of make these guys really believe that he's the one for them.
Talking with ESPN NFL Nation Titans reporter Teron Davenport here on Robbie and Rex Road. I thought a great example of it was earlier this week, Cam Ward going back and forth with Jeffrey Simmons. And I know there's been a lot of talk about whether Simmons is a good leader for this team. And, you know, there's been talk about whether he should be a captain. But that is the guy that you have to kind of impress a little bit on this team. And it seems like with Cam Ward immediately going at it with, you know, the biggest, baddest guy on the Titans defense, that's got to instill some confidence in his teammates as well.
It does. And J.C. Latham, that's one of the things he said. He's like, man, he was talking and Simmons was a little too close and he headbutted him. And I love that. That's what he said. So I think when you look at that, it's all just a part of the big picture where they've needed this type of swagger from the quarterback position. That's even what Brian Callahan said. He said that, you know, it's a different type of energy that they may not have had before on the offensive side of the ball. But he also said, and this is the key when you're talking about Jeffrey Simmons, he said Simmons being at practice, like, it elevated the energy there. So that tells you the presence that he has.
Who else, TD, stood out to you? It does seem like Oladejo at times is flashing, and obviously they badly need, you know, they need some people, obviously, on the edge to make things better than they look on paper. Who comes to mind as someone who kind of caught your eye this week?
Yeah, Oladejo had would-be sacks yesterday and the day before. And I think with him, what flashes to me, first off, is the presence. It's the enthusiasm he has for being out there. And then you watch. I mean, this is a guy that, there's a running play and, you know, Tajay Spears, Tony Pollard, whoever, they'll string it all the way out, you know, and run to the end zone. He's chasing them. And I think just the energy that he brings, it stands out to me. But there's still a long way to go with him, right? So let's not act like he's going to come in and be Javon Curry's part two. You know, you still have to have some progress from him. And I think that's the key about this time right now is you don't get too high, you don't get too low. You know what I mean? And that was one point that Stillman made that I do agree with, right? He said, you know, the 20 out of 21 people went crazy over that. But then you got the two interceptions he threw yesterday, and some people were upset about that. Neither one is going to really elevate your blood pressure. You know what I mean? So you just got to just stay even keel. But another guy that did stand out, Cody Barton, two interceptions, and then just the leadership that he brings. You know, I watched the mic'd up where he was just really coaching David Bender through some things. And then even yesterday watching him and James Williams, and he's pointing to different things. It stood out to me.
TD, I did want to ask about the offensive line. I know it's really hard to, you know, to get a great read on things, but I know the defense, you know, they throw different things. They're throwing pressures and things like that. Do you have any, well, I guess we keep going with confidence. Today is like a reminder of like how often I use the word confidence, but that is like, do you have any same lower, higher level of confidence in the full picture, understanding that right now it's Corey Levin, you know, with the ones at center?
Well, Levin, he drew a lot of praise from Callahan yesterday, but I think it's all – you could look at some things just as far as them getting their steps right and, you know, at least getting their hands on the blitzer, et cetera. But I don't really put much into offensive line until the pads go on. So I'm not really going to make a comment about confidence or anything like that. There's still a lot of work to do, put it that way.
Looking at the three rookie wide receivers, I think it's fair to say all three of them have shown flashes. Who stood out the most there? And we talked earlier about the back end of that receiver room with Bryce Oliver, who had a big day yesterday, and Restrepo, and, you know, James Proche maybe add something in the return game. How do you see the back end of that wide receiver room working out with a lot of young pieces in there?
Yeah, well, James Proche, he quietly had a good day 2 days ago. I mean, he had some really good catches, a diving one, you know, he had a slant he caught and ran away from everybody. So he is something to be reckoned with. You know, we're talking about this receiver group. It's going to be really interesting because, you know, Xavier Restrepo, he had a down day yesterday, but, you know, the other 2 days, I mean, he probably caught anywhere from 12 to 15 passes. So he's someone where you work the middle of the field. You don't ask them to stretch the field. You just work the middle. You ask them to stretch it horizontally, not vertically. I'll put it that way. It's going to be a tough competition, right? Because you got Chimere DK, who we know he's going to make the roster, but he gives them a different type of slot in that he is the guy that you could stretch the field vertically with, run those deep over routes and those types of things that he excelled in at Florida. So it's going to be a tough competition. I think Elik Iyemanner, I think he wins that X job. Tyler Lockett hasn't really done much, but he's a established pro, so he's going to be in the mix. And Ridley, and I think I should have mentioned Ridley when I talked about guys that stood out, because he is a guy that I've never seen a receiver practice with more urgency and more like every rep that he goes through. It's like runners do. And you appreciate watching a guy do that. So it's going to be a competitive group. I don't know how that one's going to shake out. If they keep six, man, it's going to be a pretty solid receiver released, and we'll have to see. And it's unfortunate Colton Dow, he's been hurt.
Last thing for you, TD, on that front, I thought what Fassel said on the in Restrepo and special teams, I thought that was really interesting. And I thought it was a great point about how, like, safeties are kind of like, that's, you can do anything with them in special teams, and that is kind of what he is physically. Did you, when you heard that, did you like his chances better? Because I immediately was like, I've kind of been wondering about him because I don't know that he really helps on special teams, but now I'm like, actually, maybe he could.
No, I always wondered how he could contribute on kickoff team. I know he's not a 4-3 guy, but he's more in the 4-6 realm. He could be a gunner as well. So, it didn't really increase any chances I thought he had. I think it's good that they're looking at him from that perspective, but it didn't change anything for me.
All right, Tyron Davenport, TD NFL, ESPN NFL Nation. Thank you, my friend, and we'll talk to you next week.
I appreciate it. You guys take it easy.
When we come back, we will react to some of what TD said, get to some of your thoughts as well. Robbie and Rex are 1025, 1063 The Game. Hey everybody, join Chase McCabe and Big Joe Dubin this morning as they broadcast live from Maple Street Biscuit Company, located at 2407 8th Avenue South in Nashville, from 9 to 11 a.m. Get some free crispy tots with the purchase of any of their delicious biscuit sandwiches, and also sign up for your chance to win tickets to an upcoming Nashville Sounds game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road. Sponsored by First Horizon, Big Bank Muscle, Small Bank Hustle. Visit firsthorizon.com/get-it-all. We are broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, Air Conditioning, Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Jake Lyman in today for Robbie Stanley. And let's see, Jared said, what'd he say? You have, like, blue on your tongue?
Yeah, something like
that. I didn't think you were being that much of a homer.
I try and be fair, but also, you got to – it's June. I don't think there's that much you can be negative about right now.
Well, you can be. I mean, you can make up things to be negative about, like someone saying, yeah, I'm confident. Oh, my God! Let me have some fake outrage for an hour straight! Someone asked on the text line if TD can set Jared straight on confidence. I mean, the take was, I think, it was after the TD part, right?
Yeah. Yes, yeah. So
TD, you'll have to do that next week. I still haven't listened to, apparently they got after it, and I never listened to that segment. So I'll have to go back and check it out. TD, interesting thoughts on, on Cam. Look, one thing I take away from that is he's flat out a better quarterback than Will Levis. I mean, obviously people bet, you certainly hope so if you're a Titans fan. You certainly hope so if you're the Titans. You did take him 1-1 as opposed to top of the second round. So I guess in terms of draft positioning, that would add up, but also different years are different levels of quality from QBs overall, and this was not a vintage year. But look, I'm with you. I think that all these things, like the ping pong and everything, one thing it definitely adds up to is endearing yourself to teammates and having a natural kind of feel for that stuff. Doesn't guarantee anything with his play, but those are positives to me. That's not being overly positive to point to that and say, yeah, you can tell that he has a good feel for that stuff.
Yeah, at this point in the year, obviously they're putting in plays and they're installing, and there's a whole lot going on in terms of scheme. But at this point in the year, when you're not putting the pads on, you still have 5 weeks until training camps open, being a good teammate and a good leader is probably just as important as what is going on the field. And when everybody reports back in July, that's when you actually start playing quote unquote real football and the live bullets start flying. And I think that's going to be when you can really start to take things from what Cam Ward actually does on the field. Like, it's great to see him, you know, make a check at the line, read the blitz, and hit Calvin Ridley for a deep ball earlier this week. But is that really going to lead to any tangible results on the field in September? Probably not. I think right now it's more just about endearing himself to his team and continuing to grow as a player. And once we get to July, we'll see if he has four book days in training camp or something like that, and if he can keep that confidence.
Yeah, and that's another thing at TD, and I think that is, if you want to talk about a contrast, that is definitely notable. That well into camp last year, the Levis Ridley, why can't you get on the same page thing was a very frequent topic and question being asked of both those guys. And we had Michael Draco on from ESPN who covers the Jags, and you know, there had been some stuff like that with Ridley there, so it was kind of like, is it more on Ridley? Whatever it was, it took him time. It does look like right now there's an instant clicking with those two. That's going to be huge. I mean, look, Calvin Ridley is the best receiver on the team. I think that's indisputable.
Yeah.
And he's got to have a big year for them to have any chance of being competitive.
I think the receiver room is deeper this year than it was last year, but you still have to have that guy who can be a 1,000-yard receiver like Calvin Ridley was last year. And you're right. The last year, we spent most of June and July talking about, can they get on the same page? They still aren't hitting the deep balls right now. And it led to issues in the season. Will Levis underthrew Calvin Ridley in Chicago on a deep ball. He threw a pick on a ball to Calvin Ridley against the Jets in week two. And then he had the throw to Ridley that ended up being a touchdown against the Jets. But I'm not so sure that was Levis. It was more Ridley making adjustments. So, you know, it's good to see that that's not an issue right now. And they seem to be in sync, whether that's talking about the touchdown pass that's made the rounds on social media or the fact that they're playing ping pong against each other in the locker room. I think both could have an impact on that relationship.
Apparently Ridley's better than Ward there, so he must be a confident ping pong player. Paul Kuharski has weighed in with the don't put too much stock into the fossil comment, you know, but so my whole thing is, you know, in terms of like fossil's a positive, you know, he's positive, and some coaches are like that, right? Some coaches are, I mean, Brian Callahan's like that. Brian Callahan is going to trend positive. He's going to look at the bright side of things. He's going to, you know, he's not going to typically, like Mike Mularkey, when he was here, like he would not be afraid to just talk about someone struggling or their injury or whatever it is. But my thing with Fossil and the Restrepo is just that I thought the way he broke it down was, it just made me think of it in a different way. It made me think of Restrepo as a special teams guy in a different way. Whereas I think in my mind, it's always like, do you have the speed to be on the outside in special teams and you can find a role? Again, I mean, you have to be good at it. You have to be able to tackle. You have to be fearless to a certain extent. And I don't know if he has those elements, but if he wants to make the team, that's where it gets interesting. And like, if you can do more than one thing on a football team at the back end of any room, that usually ends up being really valuable.
For sure. If you're going to be wide receiver 6 or 7 on an NFL team, you can't just be a wide receiver.
Or the fourth running back, or the fifth, sixth linebacker, et cetera, et cetera.
If you're on the team that deep on the roster, they're not putting you on the 53 just to sit there and maybe go run 3 routes a game. Like, you're going to have to do something else. So if Restrepo wants to make the team, I think he is going to have to prove that he can play special teams. And you're right, it's speed is an element of it, but I think it will be a question of, if he's a gunner, can he go hit somebody and wrap up a tackle and do
or
that
kind of
stuff?
He could be a wing. You know, he might be a wing on
right.
Part.
He may not be a gunner, but you know,
but good at, you know, every person on the field does actually have a job. So can you be good at it? All right, when we come back, weekend winners, Robbie and I are in an absolute dogfight. Connor Newt is picking for Ian. Weekend winners coming up next. Robbie and Rex are 102.5, 106.3 The Game.
It's time to pick some winners. We hope. Robbie and Rex Road have weekend winners for you. Now on ESPN. 102.5 The Game and the Game Nashville app.
It's that time of week, and you know, I'm trying to figure this out. So a week from today, what will we still have? We will still have, we could, I mean, we may be done with both of these series, right?
Maybe one of the game sevens would be a week from today.
So we could,
actually, no, the NBA goes late. So Friday, Monday, Thursday, and then Sunday would be game seven.
Okay, so we could potentially have a game seven in the NBA.
And then NHL, game seven would be a week from tonight.
Okay, so we could potentially have both game sevens. All right, and then we still have the College World Series. So I think, okay, so this will be the next to last week then of weekend winners. And right now, Robbie and I both went 4-2 with our locks last week. So we are both tied for first. Ian went 3-3, didn't get his locks. He is two. We were all tied going into last weekend. So Ian is 2 points back. He is counting on Connor Newt today to bring him home.
I'll do my best.
So we've got three games that we're all picking, then we're all going to pick three of our own. First game, and Jake, feel free to weigh in with him. You know, if you want to,
sure.
I mean, you can maybe try to talk Connor Newt
out
of a pick that might be a bad pick.
If you need help, you just let me know.
We can tag team this.
Okay.
We're pretty good at weekend picks, so we can do this.
There we go. All right, so first one, Thunder Pacers tonight, game four in Indy. The Thunder are -6, so a lot of, you know, and the Thunder are very good, and it was a heck of a win for the Pacers in game three. We will go with Robbie first. He is going with the Thunder and making that his lock, immediate lock for Robbie. There we go. That was a very quiet guarantee. Charles Barkley, is he more meek now that he's on ESPN? Connor Newt. Actually, I guess I'm supposed to go first. Whatever. We're tied first. I'm also going Thunder. I'm going to give those points. And what do you say, Connor?
I will also go Thunder to be boring.
I would go Thunder, too.
You know, this series is usually either the Thunder lose close or it's a blowout. I don't think it's going to be a blowout, but I think the Thunder will win the next two.
So we're all in agreement on that one. Stanley Cup Final, Game 5, back to Edmonton. They're flying. They're trekking halfway across the globe, immediately playing tomorrow, which is interesting after an overtime game. You wonder the fatigue factor in this one and if maybe a little lineup tweaking to try to be fresh. But it is all tied up. Incredible game last night. Let's go with me first. I'm going to go with the Oilers. Robbie, also going with the Oilers. What do you guys say?
I'll go Panthers. I think they have the momentum. Obviously, Edmonton just won in overtime, but the Panthers are just stone-cold killers. They always seem to bounce back, so we'll go Florida.
I was leaning Oilers, but, you know, not strong enough. You feel good, Panthers? Go Panthers.
Go Panthers.
And you know what? Ian trails us both by
right.
two, so
he needs to make a move.
He needs to differentiate.
We got to take big swings.
Exactly. He's got to differentiate himself anyway. Okay, game six. We'll go to you first on this one. This is going back to Florida for game six. What do you say, Connor? /Jake.
I'll go Edmonton in game six.
Okay.
Yeah, this one feels destined for seven games. So, you know, if you go Panthers tomorrow night, got to go Oilers in game six.
Should we lock it up?
Oh, I don't know about that.
Yeah, let's not.
Especially because we don't know the result of game five
right.
yet.
Yeah,
I don't know. Yet.
Yeah, locking the not knowing what the situation is. Yeah. All right, so we are both the other way around. So we both going Oilers at home. We're both going Panthers, Robbie and I both. So this is a chance for Ian, if it flip-flops, for him to be tied before we even get into the individual picks. All right, individual picks. We'll start with Robbie. He's got three. He's got baseball tonight. He's got Rockies, Braves. Braves minus 1.5, and he is going with the Braves. I've also looked at the baseball schedule. You may be surprised to hear. White Sox, Rangers. White Sox at the Rangers. Rangers minus 1.5. Give me the Rangers for my pick. And Connor /Jake, your first individual pick for Ian.
Lyman, let's go with your old faithful boys.
Yeah, you're going Tigers tonight?
Tigers tonight, hosting the Reds. I like the Tigers to win. -1.5, I think they cover.
I can't say they're the best team in baseball anymore. They're half a game back of the Mets. Montero's going tonight. I'd feel better about tomorrow if you'd want to do that. Flaherty throws tomorrow. But, you know, I'm always good with picking
the Tigers. We're taking swings here.
Okay, we're taking swings. Tigers tonight.
And by the way, 2/3 of the show right now today is Tigers fandom, which is very exciting for me. And by the way, let's go to Robbie. He's got Reds Tigers tonight also. He is going Tigers minus 1.5 against the Reds. So a lot of Tigers love on the show.
All right.
My second pick, White Sox Rangers tomorrow. And DeGrom going for the Rangers. That's going to be Rangers minus 1.5. Make that my lock on a Saturday game.
So you're going back to back.
I need to hear it. Need to hear it, Connor.
What?
I just made it my lock.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I need that. There it is. Okay.
Sorry. He's a little quiet.
There he is. Okay. All right. Your second pick for Ian.
Let's go over to NCAA baseball. Give me the Chanticleers to take down Arizona. And you know what? Since I'm feeling a little special, make it the lock.
Yes.
Minus 1.5 to take down Arizona.
They are minus 1.5?
They are.
Okay. I love it. Little
actually, I like that because college baseball games, I think you can get into blowout territory. So,
yeah,
we'll see.
I love it. I am here for the Chanticleers and Murray State. Okay, and we'll go ahead back to you for your third and final pick for Ian.
Oh, let's go back to the MLB. My St. Louis Cardinals are playing tonight. They are playing the Milwaukee Brewers. They got shut out last night by Jacob Mizorowski.
Jacob Mizorowski in his debut.
He was dealing. I think they bounce back. I think they win. They are also minus 1.5, which I guess is just the standard for baseball.
Yes.
Eric Fetty versus Freddy Peralta. I think the Cardinals cover plus 1.5. Give me St. Louis.
So wait, but the Cardinals are minus, or they are plus?
They are plus. Milwaukee's the favorite.
Okay. There we go. All right. Robbie, his third and final pick. Giants, Dodgers tonight. All of his are MLB tonight. Dodgers minus 1.5. Going with the Dodgers. So there you go. And for me, I decided to look around the schedule, and I found White Sox Rangers on Sunday. You know, I just got a feeling about those Texas Rangers. Give me the Rangers minus 1.5. I'm counting on the crappy, awful, hateable, terrible buns Chicago White Sox to finally bring me home and win this competition.
I mean, if you were going to go with the sweep for a series, I think that Braves-Rockies series in Atlanta might have been the one to go for, though.
I'm actually surprised that Robbie
didn't go for all of them?
Yeah, have more, because he's definitely leaned in heavily on the whoever's playing the Rockies. But, you know, I don't know. I got a feeling about the Texas Rangers. I don't know what it is.
All right.
Just feeling it's going to be there. I mean, Chicago is playing better. They are also still 7-28 on the road.
No,
so.
they are not good, but yeah. – They are better.
They are playing better.
They are better than their worst record in 100 years last season.
That is true. Making progress. Congratulations, Chicago White Sox. When we come back, we will wrap up the show. Robbie and Rex Show, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Well, it's our last segment on Robbie and Rex Show, so I probably should give away these tickets, Connor Newt.
You may have to.
Holiday World and Splashing Safari in Santa Claus, Indiana. Make a splash this summer at the water coastal capital of the world. Take your family to Holiday World and Splashing Safari. Just a short drive away. Get tickets at holidayworld.com. I've got tickets to give away. Let's go caller 3-4 Holiday World tickets. Jake Lyman has done a yeoman's job of filling in for Robbie Stanley today, even though Jared
just being a homer.
Yeah, claimed you were being a homer. What do we want to talk about in the last segment? I have something I want to talk about.
Go ahead.
I want to ask you about the team that you call as the play-by-play announcer for Vanderbilt women's basketball. So we talked about a little bit about this off the air. Ayanna Moore transfers to Notre Dame.
Right.
When I saw that, I was like, man, just another scorer shooter. I don't love that development. Vanderbilt has Michaela Blakes coming back. I think Michaela Blakes has the limit. I mean, I think Michaela Blakes can be one of the best players in college basketball this year, and I think she's going to be a pro, and I think the sky's the limit, and that's the type of player that can take a program to special things.
She should have been the National Freshman of the Year, and I will argue that. I know Sarah Strong won it, and very good year for Sarah Strong, obviously won the national championship at UConn, so don't want to take anything away from her, but all of the metrics they used for Sarah Strong were the advanced ones. I'm like, all right, well, Michaela went on the road twice and dropped 50 on SEC teams.
Yeah.
That's never been done before. She broke the SEC.
By a player, not just a freshman, by a player.
By a player. She broke the SEC scoring record twice, broke the NCAA freshman record, broke the true freshman record, then the all-freshman record for the NCAA. So, Michaela, I can't even imagine what she's going to look like in year two with a full offseason with Shea Ralph and that staff over there. And then Camille Pierre is back too, who averaged close to 20 and 10, if I'm remembering correctly, and had a huge start to the year, had a huge game down the stretch in the NCAA tournament against Oregon with the loss in overtime, and then brought in two pretty big post pieces from other SEC schools. Aaliyah Del Rosario was a former McDonald's All-American at LSU. She is 6'6", so I may be wrong, but I think she is the biggest player that Coach Ralph has had since arriving.
And she's never really had a big, big post
right.
since she's been here.
Right. And I think it helps because Camille Pierre had to play in the paint most of last year because Sasha Washington missed the entire season, and some of the other younger post players were injured and maybe developing a little bit more. So moving Camille to the four, maybe the three, I think is going to be helpful for her. Sasha Washington's back this year. And then most recently, last week, brought in Texas transfer Jackalenga Mwenintunda, who she's 6'2", averaged like 4-4 last year with the Longhorns, but went to a Final Four. So a lot of experience they're bringing into that room.
So Ayanna Moore is out, and I like her as a complimentary scorer. I have liked her. She's going to Notre Dame.
Yep.
Do they have enough on the perimeter to help Michaela Blakes?
That's probably the question, which it's funny because I think the last couple years it's been the backcourt's great. Can they rebound against SEC bigs? Now they've got the size, but they need a kind of a running mate for Michaela Blakes. Again, I haven't been out there. They just started working out again this week. But Aubrey Galvin is a freshman from Chicago, and then Ava J. Black is a freshman from Boston, who are both kind of guard wing players. Galvin's more of a point guard. So I have a feeling that they're pretty confident in their ability to make an instant impact, considering that they didn't bring in a transfer guard this cycle through. And then Madison Green, who was coming off a torn ACL last year, another year healthy. She's shown a lot of flashes. So I think she'll be an important piece in that backcourt too.
So what are we talking about here? Like what's because I've seen some preseason rankings, you know, that have Vanderbilt right around the top 10, 15 range. I mean, is this a team you think could be like a deep NCAA tournament run potential team?
I think this is a team that was disappointed in the way last season ended because their goal was to make the Sweet 16 and get past that first weekend, and obviously came back from down 20 in the first round against Oregon, still lost in overtime. So I think they're going to have a chip on their shoulder. I think this is a team that could easily be hosting NCAA tournament games in Memorial Gym next March. They're a lot of the outlets, like you said, top 10, top 15, the top 16 teams get to host. You're playing an SEC schedule, so you're always going to have, you know, those kind of metrics on your side because the SEC is always a gauntlet. Going to play Virginia in the ACC-SEC Challenge, which was announced yesterday, and it's always a great day to beat the Wahoos.
Yes. You get to go back home, but to rival territory.
No, they're coming here.
Oh, they're coming here.
Thankfully, okay. Vandy had been on the road for the first 2 years of the ACC-SEC Challenge, so finally get one here. The rest of the schedule not announced, but I think this is a team that 3 or 4 seed possibility in the NCAA tournament, and at that point, you're hosting games, and I think the expectation would be second weekend and see how far you can make a run.
How good do you think Tennessee will be this year?
They'll be better. Yeah, I mean, last year, quote-unquote, a down year, they made the Sweet 16 and beat UConn for the first time in a long, long time. And they brought in a lot of talent from high school and transfers, so I think Tennessee is going to be good. Kim Caldwell's system fit in the SEC a little better than I thought it would. But there was some fatigue down the stretch. They lost to Georgia at home to end the regular season. So you wonder if maybe that continues to happen. But she's getting her own players in to run that, run-and-gun offense that they play. And
yeah,
five in, five out.
Just hockey line changes. And so it's fun. It's fun.
It is fun. And it's, you know, as a broadcaster, it's tough because it's like you've got to – The players aren't on the floor for very long, so you say one person's name, and it's like, oh, when did they get out there? But it's a fun system to see. The first shot's the best shot, and now, like I said, she's getting her players in. Like last year, she had to take a lot of what was already there.
Yeah.
Now she gets players that are kind of custom fit for the system she wants to run.
What's the – because I do look at – I look at men's basketball too. Obviously, a really exciting first year for Mark Byington. We know what Tennessee is, and I think that there's good potential. And Vanderbilt has had some success now at home against Tennessee. But what's the potential for women's basketball to be a rivalry where, kind of like baseball, where it's not just a rivalry that's intense in the state, but like it's actually two relevant programs nationally having a rivalry for a period of time?
I think last year was really important for that, because even as Vandy's program ascended, they still couldn't get over the hump of beating Tennessee. Like, made it back to the NCAA tournament in 2024, but was 0-2 against Tennessee. Last year, Vandy had the Michaela Blake's buzzer beater to beat Tennessee in Nashville, which was a huge moment, and then beat them pretty handily in the SEC tournament. It wasn't a 15-point game, but I don't think the game was ever in all that much doubt. So, first time ever that Vandy has beaten Tennessee twice in the same season. I think that's huge, because now it's not, well, it's a rivalry game, but we've beaten you 19 out of the last 20. Now it's, all right, we've beaten you two times in a row. This year the game's going to be in Knoxville, so it'll be interesting to see if Vandy can win in Knoxville for just the second time ever.
Yeah. I mean, you think back to like Vanderbilt's peak. This program has made a Final Four. This program has been to Elite Eight,
right?
And even then, it was because at that point, Tennessee was just the program, and so even then, it wasn't the wins weren't frequent. Obviously, Tennessee, it's been a long, and we'll see if Tennessee can ever get back to that level. But I feel like you got two really good coaches. I know that Shea has kind of changed her style with her personnel, but like both of them, I like the pressuring. I like the up tempo. I think it's a lot of fun.
It makes it interesting, those contrasts of styles, because Shea and the coaching staff, they like to get up and down the floor, but not quite as much as Tennessee does.
Pure, yeah.
But I think Vandy they're a huge proponent. They tell me pretty much every game of their good defense is going to lead to scoring on the other end. So it is interesting to see, the high pace. It's basically like 7 seconds or less that Tennessee runs, and Vandy's trying to trap them and force bad passes and turn that into points on the other end. So I guess the schedule will probably come out in the next couple of months. I think that's one that a lot of people are going to instantly circle, is because now it's only guaranteed once a year with the new scheduling changes. They're going to circle that game in Knoxville, Vandy and Tennessee.
So that is just going to be in Knoxville this year?
I guess there is a chance that they could play twice, but it's not a protected – there are no protected rivalries in SEC women's basketball anymore, because you play 16 games, so you play everybody once, you play one team twice, and they didn't protect any rivalries.
Yeah, which I don't like only 16 games. When you have a league this huge,
right?
I think 18, see why you don't at least play 18, if not 20, but play 18, right?
Yeah, which makes sense, but also with how tough those games are, like.
Yeah, it's a grueling league.
You don't want to go 6-12 in the SEC, because that might kick you out of the tournament, even though you're probably better than a team that goes 10-8 in the ACC.
But we saw with SEC men's basketball last year, a bad league record
didn't seem to matter.
Yeah, I mean, if your league does well enough against everybody else, it should.
The metrics will show that you're better than those teams.
It
so,
should pay off.
Yeah, I agree. I think 18 games is – it'll eventually happen. But this year, no guarantee that Tennessee makes a return trip to Nashville.
I really hope that Robbie is listening. Robbie, who tries to limit my college basketball discussion. He spends his entire life is built around not letting me talk college basketball. It's been very liberating today.
No, it's fun. It's fun. And, especially during the off season, I don't get to talk much about Vandy women's basketball. So it's cool to give a little update out there. Should be a fun season starting November.
And this will be your
fourth year.
This is your fourth year of calling games. Man. Yep. The years are flying by. Yeah, no doubt. On the so we have a NBA game four tonight. What are we looking for? I mean, we all picked the Thunder. I hope we have a good game. I mean, it is at Indiana, and that atmosphere, I think, does help. I think in basketball,
yeah,
it helps. It matters. But I feel like everybody just thinks, okay, Oklahoma City is going
right.
to reassert themselves.
They're not going to go down 3-1. But it could happen again. It's
can
Indiana.
We get a good game? You
yeah.
know? I have to think we're going to get a good game.
The Thunder, I'm forgetting what series it was. They went down 2-1. Was it the Nuggets? They went down 2-1. And
yeah, I think that's right.
Then blew out Denver on the road in game four. Like, I think that's kind of what everybody has in their minds. But Indiana hasn't been a typical team in this postseason. Even if they go down big early, there's nothing saying that Halliburton's not going to lead another comeback.
No, look, I have completely changed, and this is where, you know, this is where the playoffs are great because, you know, how much Indiana did I watch this year here and there? Legit team and a yep. really fun team, easy one to root. I'd love to see them win it, you know. I mean, I think for either fan base it'd be great. But I do think OKC, everyone's talking dynasty, they're going to be knocking on the door in the next few years without question. And I'm not saying Indiana won't, but I'm not sure in the East that they're – like, this is an opportunity.
Right.
You know,
The Celtics got upset. The Cavs laid an egg. They're going to be
– injuries were part of it.
They're going to be some really good teams in the East. I think the Thunder are going to be the team to beat in the West for at least the next few years.
Yeah, agree. And that'll do it for our show. Chase and Big Joe coming up next. Thank you, Jake Lyman. Thank you, Connor Newt, Robbie and Rex. 102.5, 106.3 The Game.